Hello, everyone. Welcome to Awaken Your Soul's Journey, the podcast that explores the transformative power of grief. I'm your host, Angela Clement, and I'm here to guide you on a profound journey of healing and self-discovery. Each episode, you will be introduced to experts, authors, and individuals who have experienced grief firsthand to share their stories, insights, and wisdom. Together, we will explore many facets of grief and shed light where there is darkness. Throughout this podcast, we will explore different tools and techniques that can support you in your healing process, from mindfulness and meditation to creative expression and spiritual practices. We will provide you with a diverse range of resources to help you navigate your grief. Whether you have experienced a tremendous loss or simply want to gain a deeper understanding so you can support someone else, this podcast is for you. So if you're ready to embark on this awakening journey with us, make sure to subscribe. Together, let's explore, learn, find healing, and embrace the transformation that awaits us. Everyone, thank you for being here today. Thank you for joining the podcast. I am super excited to have with me today, Reverend Dr. David Schottka. I hope I did that right.
You did, actually. Now, it's not hard for a Saskatchewan girl to pronounce a Ukrainian name. So
Right? Yeah, so he is the founder and director of Spirit Equip Ministries, a trans-denominational equipping ministry focused on developing spiritual disciplines. He's also the chair of the Alliance Pray team, a ministry developed by the General Assembly of the CNMA Canada to serve as a catalyst to develop prayer equipping resources and leading events across the movement and beyond.
Yes, that's quite, actually, most of it's beyond now. I do the odd Alliance event, but I'm speaking of many different denominational traditions.
Okay.
So kind of fun to see that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time today. And I thought we would just start out, just let us know how you got into this work that you do now.
Oh my, that's a long story. I better try and keep it short.
Here, I'll take my glasses off. Where we go?
No, the way it started was quite supernatural and quite unexpected. So I'll just start off by saying I was a high school student in Southern Ontario. And not too far, for your listeners' sake, just north of Niagara Falls. I grew up in a town called St. Catharines. And that's 20 kilometers north. You're talking Canadian or American? Is your constituency American or Canadian?
I'm Canadian.
I know you're Canadian. Is your constituency Canadian? Okay, so I'll say 20 kilometers, 12 miles. There you go.
Okay.
Falls. And I went to high school there, and all of my marks were just about the same, within 1 or 2 percentage points all the way across the board. And I remember very distinctly having a chat with my dad, who was at that time somewhere between agnostic and atheist. He didn't know what he believed, and he'd suffered much. Actually, it's a prairie story. He and my mom both come from Saskatchewan, Manitoba. He was from Manitoba. And when he was a young boy on a prairie farm with Ukrainian immigrant parents, he got kicked by a horse, and he got hit in the jaw, broke his jaw. And he suffered immensely, and wound up having muscle damage to his eyes and got Coke bottle size glasses. His sister saved his life. He was the youngest of 14. And then she wound up taking him to a hospital in Winnipeg, saved his life. Anyway, bottom line was he grew up with his sight quite impaired. And he had a grade 3 education because he was too embarrassed to walk to the front of the local school, you know, so he'd stayed home on the farm and worked with his dad and eventually, you know, bluffed his way through life with humor and lots of hard work, that kind of thing. Suffered much, suffered a lot. He married my mom, and she also had one of those backgrounds where she suffered much. Anyway, the bottom line was we didn't grow up around church. And but there was a pastor who'd always show up at my parents' restaurant. My parents ran a restaurant, and there were 5 apartments attached to that. And he would always show up when anybody was in trouble, and he didn't care who they were, you know. So that congregation was right next door to the local hospital, and he would walk into the hospital and visit all the people who didn't have a faith affiliation or whatever. And he would walk up and down the street and visit people. He was a visiting pastor first and foremost. And he would show up at my parents' restaurant, visit with all the customers. My mom and dad would nod their heads and shamed us into going Christmas and Easter.
Yes.
At any rate, there wasn't a lot of faith in the family. My mom had a kid's Bible when I was little, but we didn't talk about faith. We didn't go to church except for these crazy kinds of in-between times. And then something happened that sort of shifted that. I was standing by this refrigerator getting ready to go to bed one night, and I had this chat with my dad, and I said, "Dad, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life." He said, "Oh, son, have yourself a good sleep. You'll know in the morning." You know, it's one of those sparkly eye things, you know. So I went to bed that night, and I woke up the next day, and I knew I was going to be a pastor. And so I went to my, I had two spares at that particular time. I was in grade 13. And you don't have grade 13 in Saskatchewan, but
no.
That got phased out a little while ago, but in those days there was. So I had two spares in my day. And I walked into the guidance counselor and I said, "I'm going to be a pastor." He said, "What denomination?" I told him. And I said, "Oh, I don't like my church." And he said, "Well, come to mind. It's the same denomination." So he booked a meeting with his pastor. And the guy had an English accent. He put his feet on the desk and he smoked a pipe and he blew smoke rings and talked about the Lord. And so he was really an intriguing kind of a guy. And then he said, "Now they love you in your church back there. And that pastor, he's been visiting your parents for a long time." I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, bloom where you're planted, babe." So I said, "Okay, I'll do that." And he said, "You can come here if you want. But I think you should just go into that pastor's office and see whether or not he is, you know, got some interest in trying to come alongside you." So I went into that pastor's office the next day, my next pair. And he said, "You're going into the ministry." I said, "What?" He said, "You're going in the ministry. I've been praying about it for 6 months. I felt like you're going to go into the ministry. It's the 100th anniversary of our church. And so the board meets tonight. I'd like to put your name forward as our centennial candidate. We haven't had a candidate for ministry in 20 years. And then there were three committees that had to meet over a period of 2 years. They were all collapsed into the next week and a half. And I got through all of the committees. I mean, we're talking major groups of people who travel great distance to be able to do these meetings. And for some reason, some fluke on the calendar, I got through all of them in about a week and a half. And so I remember walking up to my dad and saying, "Dad, remember when we were standing by the refrigerator and you said I should get a good night's sleep?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, son." And, you know, he was smoking his cigarette and mopping the floor in the restaurant kind of thing. And I was working with him. And I said, "Well," he said, "have you thought about a career?" He said, "Oh, no, I'm in one." He said, "What's that?" He said, "I'm going to be a pastor." And he turned white as a ghost. His jaw dropped. And he said, "We have to talk." I said, "Okay, when?" He said, "Quick as we can." So we finished up the chores in the restaurant. And we always had to mop the floors and take the grease off the fans and wipe the counters and, you know, put all the dishes away and all that kind of thing. So her parents' home was right next door. We sat down. Nobody else was home. He had to take a shot of whiskey. He had this shot. He turned white as a sheet and he started to physically shake. And then he said, "Do you remember when we were standing by the fridge?" I said, "Dad, yes." He said, "Well, I went to bed and you went to bed." I said, "Yeah, I know. That's just pretty good out." I said, No. I put my head on the pillow and the risen Lord appeared to me in the doorway of the bedroom. And he walked over to me and said, "Wake your son, David, ask him what he dreams. And then tell him he's going to travel. He's going to write. He's going to be a pastor. Tell him that." And my dad thought, "Oh, okay." So he jumps out of bed. He runs up the stairs. He tries to shake me awake and I don't wake up. And so then he comes to himself and he said, "I don't even know if I believe in this." So you know, this is a crazy dream. So he walks back downstairs and he says, "That I'm just going to go to bed. That's just nutty. I'm obviously thinking about my son's faith and this is delusions or something." Puts himself in bed, closes his eyes. My mom, of course, was just right asleep because they used to get up at 5 a.m. to open the restaurant for 6. Anyway, the Lord reappears to him, walks over to him, takes him by the scruff of the pajamas, stands him to his feet and says, "Go wake your son, David, ask him what he dreams. The dream is fading. Do it now." My dad said, "Go away." He said, "No, do it now. Do it now. I'm committed." So he runs up the stairs, shakes me awake. I'm groggy. And I have no memory of this, but my dad did. Later on, it became my own. But regardless of this, he looks at me and he says, "What are you dreaming, David?" And he said, apparently I said to him, "I am with the Lord. He is showing me traveling across the earth. I'm supposed to teach the gospel in all kinds of different languages and cultures. I'm supposed to write. I'm supposed to travel. I'm going to be a pastor. And my dad said, well, I have something to tell you. You are going to be a pastor. And then he woke up enough and he said to himself, this is nuts. And he went back to bed. The next day I woke up and it was all done. The point was, it was all done in a week and a half. Mm. And the pastor in the church already knew. And it was this, and all these people met. They were supposed to meet over a 2-year window, and they all met in a week and a half. And it was signed, sealed, and delivered. I was a candidate for the ministry of my denomination. Away I went.
Wow.
That's how it started.
So you're clearly living your life's purpose, obviously.
I believe I am, yes. And actually, it came at the end of my life rather than the middle and I do think it should have happened sooner. And I do think that what happened in some of the things where it was about to happen and got kiboshed, there were people who didn't want to pay the price, you know. But regardless of that, that doesn't matter. The point is I'm in it now. And yeah. I've now written 5 books. And what I'm doing is exactly what was spoken to my dad when I was, you know, just a young man. Now, later on, there were moments where that call became my own personally, and there were indisputable marks of how that thing happened. And it's just this incredible kind of thing. But I mean, the program's about dealing with grief, dealing with trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I know you're no stranger to this. So
no, I'm not. No, I just told you about my dad's injury when he was a kid. And he always suffered with, he had kind of an attitude about bitterness. In the end, he did, in fact, become a Christian believer. But the issue for him was that he could not believe in the goodness of God in the face of all the loss across the planet. And now we're seeing a repeat of something that was in the family history. So I don't know if you know much about Ukrainian history, but Stalin starved 5 million Ukrainians to death. And they had a bumper crop just after the communist revolution in Russia. He wanted the Ukraine's land and resources and so on. And they had a bumper crop, and he was going to institute this collectivization of farms, which means that the farmers who own their land would have to surrender it to the state. They didn't want to. And so he let them harvest their crop, and the grain was stooped and standing in the field. And he sent in the Russian army, and anybody who went to get their crop, he shot and killed.
Wow.
And so the conservative number is 3 million. The expansive number is 7, and the true number is probably about 5 million Ukrainians. In a time when the nation had 30 million people, so 1 out of 6 people was killed. That whole part of East Ukraine that is now in dispute that Russia wants was repopulated by Russian nationals by Stalin. And they said the land belongs to us. I mean, there we knew people. He worked with people who had escaped what's called the Holodomor, the famine. It was a false famine that was created by Stalin himself. And he could not bring himself to believe if a God would allow people to harvest their crop and then be shot dead for trying to get a piece of grain out of a field, you know, that kind of thing. And so it was hard. They couldn't understand. And all through. Now, his mother was a strong believer, but she suffered too. I mean, her husband was violent, a nasty, mean man. And so the stories I would hear, the reason I got no hair in my head is the hair-raising stories I heard from my dad about what he would do. And he used to beat his mother, and mother had to leave in the 1930s when nobody did. And there were 14 kids. And so she lived with each of those children in turn. And grandpa eventually repented and changed, but it was too late. And so my dad grew up with a violent man in the house. He was just a young boy when this terrible thing happened. Him and his older brother, John, were the only two left in the house when it happened. And so he had all kinds of trouble. Then he had the thing with his eyes. That didn't help him at all, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, and in my own life, my younger brother took his life. And my wife was desperately ill with muscular dystrophy. And so that's my life.
Yeah.
You know, you grow up around bitterness, and then you have your brother take his life. And I will tell you something. When that happened, the sky was gray for like 2 years. It didn't matter if it was a bright and sunny and beautiful day with the birds singing. I just couldn't see the blue, and I couldn't hear the birds. And it took a long season to get to the place where that turned around. Faith helped me, actually. This is the thing. I went for long walks in those days. I just changed denominations. I'm now in the Christian Missionary Alliance. I just joined the Alliance. And my brother took his life on the day before Good Friday. It was going to be my first Good Friday service in that church. And oh man, I mean, it's the highlight of the year. You're in a new place. You got a fresh beginning. You're just getting started. Your people don't even know you yet. I'd arrived there in September, October. I think it was October. And then this was now March, you know, so I mean, I'm starting to make hello, pleased to meet you kinds of friends, but nothing like a lifelong friend at that point in the game. And they wound up coming alongside me while I grieved the loss of my brother over Good Friday when we were at the highlight of the Christian year and I had no associate staff. So I had to do the Good Friday service. I did the Resurrection Sunday service, and then I hit the wall, you know, just absolutely, totally, completely hit the wall. So I went for long walks. There was a conservation area. I was in Brampton, Ontario, if anybody's living in Ontario. And there was a conservation area called the Heart Lake Conservation Area, about 2 blocks from my home. Now, I used to jog, you know, but during that season, I would go for long walks in that conservation area. And I'd open the Psalms and I'd read these Psalms of Lament about the anguish of the believer in the middle of terrible trouble. And I came to one, and there was a turning point. And I remember the moment I stepped on a piece of wood on a pathway, and the wood cracked. It was April. The wood cracked. And it seemed like it was one of those pictures of how do I say this? The fragileness of human life, I guess. I was thinking about my brother, thinking about the fact that he did this crazy thing, and thinking about how bad that felt for my parents and me and my other brother. And then I was reflecting on Psalm 130, and the text said this: "If the Lord should count sins, who could stand? But with you, there's forgiveness." And I thought, yep, he was an idiot. He did that terrible thing to himself. Maybe his brain snapped. And then I realized, whenever he did me something wrong, it would take me a year and a half to get over it. But God, if you tell him something, he gets over it as soon as you say And then my prayer for my brother's eternity, my prayer for my own emotional anguish, all of it was like something shifted in that moment. Just like it was the snap of the twig, it was the reflection on the psalm, and it all sort of came together. And then I realized life is short. We live with the uncertainty of human life all the time. And if it had been a car accident, it would have felt different because it wasn't his own decision. But it would have been just as sudden if it had been, you know, if whatever, you know what I'm saying? This, or if there had been a crime and he'd been killed in the middle of a crime or something like this. Life is short and nobody knows if you're going to live or die in the next 20 seconds. I mean, you're a Saskatchewan girl, that thing in Humboldt. I mean, I used to drive through Humboldt and stop at that. There's a nice hotel in Humboldt. I lived in Alberta and my parents lived in Swan River, Manitoba. And I used to drive across. It was exactly 1,000 kilometers. I think that's 600 miles, right to the tenth of a kilometer, exactly 1,000 kilometers from my home in Spruce Grove to my parents' home in Swan River, Manitoba. And you know, so if we took my daughter, I had to stop halfway. She could do 5 hours in the car, and we'd always stop at Humboldt. That's what we do. I mean, that terrible accident where all these young bucks, these young hockey players, they're all dead. They're gone. I mean, it happened in a second. I can't begin to imagine what that kind of anguish would feel like. I do know, though, that in my case, at one moment, the faith was hard because there's this thing called heaven, there's this thing called hell, and I had this question in my brain. What does that mean for this commandment about not killing? Did he break the commandment by doing that? You know, is he now roasting in this awful, awful thing, or is he in heaven with God? And I had these awful kinds of anguish questions. Now, with all the love I can muster, let me tell you what came to me. And I just did a funeral for a family friend who took his life as well. And I mean, we're talking about a month ago. I just did that. And then 2 weeks before that, I did a funeral for a young man who took his life when he was a young dad with a young kid. I mean, this is so these two happened just fresh about a month and 6 weeks ago. And what I said in both cases was this: if the Lord should count sins, who could stand? And you're not saved based upon whether or not you make a stupid decision or a wise one, because all of us would be damned. You're
Exactly.
saved
Yes.
based upon whether or not you have a relationship with the living God. And everybody who has a relationship with the living God acts foolishly from time to time. I don't know anybody who hasn't got some regret about something. And if the bad decision happens to land on something that is lethal, that will take you, like making a wrong turn in a highway in a car accident, or in this case, making a deliberate plan to take your life, or you know, a medical incident or whatever. This, the Lord does not count on whether or not you did this good thing, you did this bad thing, you did this good thing, you did that bad. No. It's based upon the grace of God, and He sent Jesus for that very thing. He sent the Lord's grace to us so that we could turn to that grace in our time of need and ask Him for His mercy to draw near to us when we are in terrible trouble. And that mercy is granted. It's granted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll just tell you that the experience of passing through that and having to oversee my church and keep on going when I did not have the juice inside of me to do that was a profound lesson in perseverance and in recognizing how good the grace of God is. Because He doesn't accept us based upon our performance. He accepts us because we're human, period. And if you can rely on that, then there's a whole different way of looking at how you give care to people in trouble. So my worldview changed then, really profoundly changed.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge thing for a lot of people to recognize that, you know, no matter what we do, we're still loved. And it doesn't excuse the fact that, you know, bad things happen. I mean, that's part of our human experience. But I really resonate with what you're saying about that whole, and it just takes a light. It takes something, it brings a lightness to it. It's not so heavy then, you know, because we, as kids, we were raised to believe that, you know, if we did bad things, we would go down into, you know, the fire.
Well, but that the Bible says that too. So, but I mean, it's counterbalanced by this thing called grace. Now, listen, there, I do believe in a judgment day. Let me be as clear as I can. Listen, if there's people who out there who have chosen evil and do not repent of it and stay in it, right now, as we speak, I mean, we're talking about the annihilation of millions of innocent citizens in the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We're talking about Hamas taking people's heads off because they don't believe in the right of Israel to exist. And then Israel over retaliating and destroying innocents who are living in this place called Gaza. And Hitler did the same thing with millions of Jews, and Stalin did that to millions of Ukrainians, and Ho Chi Minh. But what's the guy's name? The guy who ran the communist state in China, Mao Zedong, he killed 30 million Chinese who disagreed with him. Do you think they're in heaven, or is there a just reward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, they didn't repent. They didn't change. They didn't say, oh, God, forgive me. They said, oh, I like what I'm doing, and I'm going to keep doing it right through to the day I die. Mm-hmm. I do believe there is a judgment for that. Now, God's God. I'm not God, and I'm glad I'm not God. I mean, in fact, when I try and tell my dog what to do and the dog doesn't obey me, I'm glad I'm not God. I can't even make the animal obey me. Anyway, so I do believe what the scripture says about heaven and hell. I do believe heaven's going to be full. I do believe that those who don't choose to repent will be a minimal number, but I do believe that there is this place where there's judgment. Now, what it looks like, I think the Bible's description, I think English language runs out. I don't know what it's going to be like, but it's going to be grim. And I think heaven is going to be so wondrous, and language runs out. It's just going to be so wonderful. We won't have human language to be able to describe it. Now, of course, God's the judge, not us. You're not the judge. I'm not the judge. Now, I think you're a nice lady. I wouldn't mind you being the judge. But regardless of that, it's the reality that we have in front of us is that that we have, each of us have to do our own believing. And each of us has to do our own grieving. And each of us has to do our own crying out. And each of us has to do our own recovery. And I do believe faith helps. In fact, I've seen faith at work and with other kinds of grieving. So my wife was afflicted with muscular dystrophy. And my daughter continues to be afflicted with muscular dystrophy. But my wife was healed. Do you want me to tell that story?
Absolutely. I would love to hear that.
Okay, so I served a church in Alberta. I was in the Christian Missionary Alliance. So there's lots of those in Saskatchewan and Manitoba and Alberta, all kinds of them in Alberta. So serving a church of about 1,000 people just outside Edmonton, a church called Spruce Grove Alliance. And I made a commitment together with two churches in the United States, two sister churches, one in New York State and one in Atlanta, that we would fly over to Uganda to try and help the Ugandans rebuild after the shattered despair of Idi Amin and Joseph Kony. So I don't know if you followed what happened with Kony, but he was that terrible guy who ran this ugly thing called the Lord's Resistance Army. And I want to tell you something, the Lord had nothing to do with it. He'd take people's arms off or eyes out. I met people whose noses were cut off and hands were cut off and tongues were gouged out. Terrible, terrible stuff. Anyway, the north of that country had not had any kind of decent ordered society in about 2 decades. And so there were people who'd never gone to school. There were people who'd never seen a doctor. There were people who'd never been to a church. There were people who'd not been, you know, this. And so my congregation, together with these two American ones, went over there. And our job was, my job was to train a cluster of 750 to 1,000 pastors and to give them basic skills to get started. And we brought build teams with us. So we would build buildings and they would do that work, et cetera, et cetera. And these two things went on side by side. So there was a teaching component that I would do, and there was a travel team that would do build things. So they built a library, they built a latrine, they built a little education wing for the students, et cetera. And I taught these pastors. Now, my church, Spruce Grove Alliance, paid the bills. So we're talking $500,000 here for 3 years. So they looked at me and they said, "That's a lot of money." I said, "Yeah, that is." Very generous people. In fact, this book that I wrote here, I wrote this for them. I wrote this to give it to them. I developed a training manual so that they could have this in their hands so that when we left, they would have resources to be able to start to learn. It's a book on the Lord's Prayer and how the Lord's Prayer is a summary of Jesus' teaching. Anyway, when they was done and I was traveling over there, my elder board said to me, "Let's bring the man in." And there's a long, convoluted, funny story about how that happened. But when it was all said and done, he was in my pulpit and he was a masterful storyteller. And that area of the country had been ravaged by that warlord guy. And he entered into a relationship with the prime minister of the country, Museveni, and his wife, who was a Christian believer, to see if they could organize hundreds of thousands of intercessors to pray for the Ugandan army whenever they took on Joseph Kony. Now, the interesting thing about the story is when Kony would attack the Ugandan army or vice versa, and there was no prayer preparation, he would use the practice of witchcraft. They become terrified in the middle of the fight, drop their arms and run, and then Kony would resupply. But when the intercessors would gather in the streets of Kampala, 300,000 strong, and pray for the Ugandan army, the Ugandan army would defeat Kony every time. And so this interesting relationship between the army, the parliament, and these pastors and these intercessors started to form. And they would gather in the streets of Kampala. Now, I have to tell you something. I told this story in a church in Vancouver, and a man's hand went up. And I said, "What can I do for you?" He said, "I'm Ugandan. I was there. I was among the 300,000 who would pray. We would hold candles in the streets of the city and we'd cry out to God for our nation." He was there. And so this amazing kind of thing got verified while I was telling this story in Vancouver at this church. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the church said, "Bring him in." So he was telling some of these stories about somebody praying in the night and some bullet missing somebody whose life was spared, you know, that kind of thing. It's like the stories that you used to hear about World War II and soldiers and mamas praying for their boys and that kind of thing. Anyway, it was just so exciting. We had three services on a weekend. We had a Saturday night, we had a Sunday morning at 9, and a Sunday morning at 11. And the Saturday nighters were so moved by the stories this guy told. They all walked, 100 of them walked up to us and said, "We're coming again tomorrow morning. Tell different stories." So I nodded and he nodded. So they came and they texted for their friends. And we had this oversized 9 o'clock service. It was usually a middle, the smallest attendance was Saturday. The second smallest was 9 o'clock. And then we'd have a big service at 11. Anyway, it was full at 9 o'clock. And it was electrifying. The guy was just this, he's telling these amazing stories. And of course, the church is now seeing what it is that we're doing. And this is a real big win for us because now we know people are going to ante up and we're going to get those pastors trained and so on. Anyway, it comes to 11 o'clock. And he's in the middle of one of these stories. And my wife had been afflicted with FSH muscular dystrophy. Now, it's in the news because about a year ago, the founder of Lululemon told the world that he is afflicted with FSH muscular dystrophy. He made a $100 million donation to the Muscular Dystrophy Association to search for a cure for that particular strand. And it has to do with face, shoulders, and back. It's FSH, fascioscapular humor. And the way it works is your face starts to sag, your shoulders get rounded, your shoulder blades go out of position between 16 and 20. You get chronic pain, you get dizziness. If you damage a muscle, you lose it forever and you don't get it back. You start to have mobility issues. The muscles in your abdomen hollow out. Then you have difficulty rising out of your chair. And you can't lift your arms higher than your shoulder. And if you're going to climb stairs, you have to use your legs to pick your leg up to get on the next step and so on, all the way up until you get to the top. And my wife's mom was afflicted with that. Her sister, her niece, and her were the ones who had this in the line. Well, we married because she's the first girl who ever laughed at my bad jokes. She just said, anyway, we get married, but I knew I'd be pushing a wheelchair end of my days, because that's what happened to her dad, and that's what happened to my wife's sister's husband, etc., that we were watching this. Anyway, this when the day is done, we're in church, and it's packed. It's absolutely jam-packed. I am forced to sit on the steps that the kids usually sit on, and he's in the pulpit, and I'm sitting beside him. And I'm looking out over the congregation, and it's standing room only. The sanctuary accommodated 450 people, and there easily was an extra 200 beyond that, up and down the walls and all the aisles and sitting on the seats and into the overflow in the back with a microphone. Anyway, I'm at the front, and he's telling one of these amazing stories. And, of course, I can see everybody because I'm sitting on the step, and there's my wife two rows from the front. And, of course, we're surrounded by people that we know. And there are many people in that church who'd helped us clean because she couldn't move the couch to vacuum. She couldn't wash the walls. She couldn't mop the floor anymore. She had to climb the stairs slowly. So lots of these ladies would show up and give her a hand because that's prairie hospitality. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're in this. He's telling the story, and suddenly he stops. And this bishop who had organized all these pastors in Uganda turns and looks at me. And he said, David, what is M.A.? M.A., Master of Arts? I don't know. that's exactly what I said. I have it on a CD that was recording the service. And then he said, no, I've got something wrong. Something's terribly wrong. And he put his head in the pulpit. And he hadn't finished his war story. Everybody was waiting for the climax of the war story when he did this interrupt thing. And then he looks up and he says this: it's a wasting muscle disease. It starts in your head and it goes down into your shoulders and it makes your shoulders rounded and your shoulder blades go out of position. And between 16 and 20, you start having chronic pain. You're dizzy all the time. And if you lose a muscle, you lose it forever. He gave a perfect medical trajectory for FSH muscular dystrophy. By this time, I'm looking out at my wife, who's looking at me, and he's telling this story. And then he said this: whoever has this, Jesus has just healed you. And her arms went above her head for the first time in decades. Mm. All pain vanished from her body in front of a crowd of witnesses who knew us. It was this astonishing thing. And so we had guests who'd come from Vancouver. They were staying in our home. Of course, the service finishes. We're all in absolute awe that this has occurred. And, you know, we're trying to process, but we had lunch to serve to the guests who'd come from out of town. And the plan was that we would go home and I would get up onto the top shelves to take down the heavy pots and pans that we never used unless we had a big crowd. And then she would cook with her limited mobility, but she wanted to be the cook. So she pushes me out of the way. She stands on the chair and she takes down the heavy pots and pans herself for the first time in decades. Now, we really realized she was healed a week later. Here's what happened. My son and daughter were sitting at our table. Okay. And so we're having breakfast and my daughter's eating her Cheerios and my son is having his egg or something like this. And my daughter, for some reason, She gets into a snit. I don't know why she did. She just got into this awful thing where she starts to talk about every ridiculous weak point that my son ever had in life. And so she keeps doing this to him, and he's doing his best to not retaliate, because she's 6 years younger than him. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, he's doing it, he's deflecting it, he's trying it, but she keeps it up, and it's getting bad, and it's getting from bad to worse. And I was just about to discipline my daughter when my wife had enough, and she stood up and she said, "Jessica Chotka, that's enough." And she took her by the hand and she ran her up the stairs, and she got down beside her at the bed and made her pick up all her toys and made her make her bed, and then raced her into the bathroom, got her to brush her teeth, raced her down the stairs, got her in the van, drove her to school. We were so mad at her. We didn't even know. She ran up the stairs. She ran up the stairs. And then she knelt down beside the bed and made my daughter pick up all her toys and put her in the toy bed. Hmm. And then raced her down the stairs and got her to the school.
Wow.
Now, our medical doctor had known us for 5 years. We arrived there in 2005. This happened in 2009. So 4.5 years. Same doctor. And he had been, of course, in small town, you all know each other. And so, and his coworker, Dr. Tony, was on my elder board. This is the kind of neatness or small town feel. You know this, you're in Saskatchewan, so small, so everybody knows each other. So they're all talking to each other and they're all looking at this, and he waited 3 years before he wrote the note. But I have the doctor's note with him signing off saying all effects of FSH muscular dystrophy are in complete remission. They've totally vanished from her body. It's not there. And that was in 2009. This is 2024. If she damages muscle tissue, it grows back. That's impossible. It's medically impossible. So now the other side of this is my daughter has myotonic dystrophy. We adopted my daughter, and she wound up manifesting myotonic dystrophy, and she wasn't healed. And so I have this experience of constantly dealing with my daughter, who, and it, by the way, is an intellectual component with myotonic. And so even though she is 25, her brain is about grade 3. And so she's quite innocent. She's quite gentle. She's quite sweet. And she doesn't know how, she doesn't know the difference between a $5 bill and a 50. Doesn't get it. And she's not going to be an independent adult. Full of love, full of joy. Makes me laugh all the time. Her middle name's Joy. She's not, and I can't tell you the number of times I have prayed to God for her to be well. And I have seen my wife miraculously recovered and my daughter not. Every day I live with that. Mm-hmm. So I'm in this already not yet kind of thing. Now, the healing prayer book that I wrote has to do with both of those realities, because I do believe in God's miraculous power to heal, or else I wouldn't be able to tell you a story just like the one I told you. Mm-hmm. So the way I see it is, it's we're already participating in the powers in the next age. We're not yet as we should be. And already not yet beautifully describes who I am and who we are in terms of dealing with suffering and anguish and sorrow on this place called planet Earth, and expecting miracle and miraculous intervention. And they happen, they overlap all the time. And sometimes in the same family, you'll have both. And so for me, the issue is not to say why, the issue is to say, okay, show me what to do. Show me what I can do. Show me the way that you want me to respond. And the way that I understand healing prayer is that you can't bluff a miracle. You can't produce one, but you can cooperate with one. And so I talk about what the marks of God's presence landing on you when you're going to be involved in one of those things look like, feel like, act like. And we tell stories where people died young and where something happened that wasn't as they expected it to be. And this overlapping ages, already not yet thing is the paradigm which makes the whole book hang together. And there's a phrase that I use in the book. God initiates, we respond. Not we initiate and God responds. Thank you very much. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's very interesting. And you know, that whole surrendering and acceptance of what is, you know, is, I think, one of the hardest things that, but as you said before, the faith that you have in whatever. It seems to be for me, and then there's a lot of people that I've interviewed, over 100 actually, that have transformed their lives through these kinds of challenges. And it often comes down to something that they believe.
Really, it does, yes. Now, here's the thing about faith. I mean, there's this thing called acceptance, and there's this thing called, I don't accept that. there's contentment that flows from the faith, but there's this anger at injustice or disease or trouble.
Right.
And so you have both of those coexisting. It's the same thing. It's already not yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, so whatever faith you come from, there's this moment where you recognize that you cannot change this one. There's also this thing that comes upon people who are people of faith. Well, I'm commanded to change this thing. you'll get somebody whose kid sister dies of leukemia. And because of that, they become a medical practitioner and they become somebody who's involved in searching for the cure. And so the motivator for them doing something to forever change what they did not bear in their childhood was the fact that they had to bear it in their childhood. I mean, this is this crazy kind of tension. Mm-hmm. Between what exists and what is yet to be, always is before us. And faith will live in both realities at the same time. And so you grieve the loss and you take action so that it never happens again. I mean, Lorenzo's Oil. Did you ever watch that movie, Lorenzo's Oil?
No.
It was about a young boy who got some sort of a nerve disorder, and eventually he becomes paralyzed, and his parents don't accept just receiving, how do you say this, adaptive therapies. They wanted to find a cure. And in the course of time, they discovered that a particular kind of oil would stop the decay of the myelin sheath inside this thing. It led to their son's trouble. But of course, their son wound up forever paralyzed. And yet children now who take Lorenzo's Oil don't get paralyzed. And so they accepted their son's fate. And they wound up having to deal with transforming this for future families from that point forward. And Nick Nolte is one of the actors who stars in that movie. But again, it's the same sort of thing. You're motivated by something that should not have been. In the end, you have to accept it. But they don't accept it for somebody else. And they do all this work. And they're not medical people. But in the end, they find the cure if you catch it early. And it was too late for their own son. And so you have this kind of pathway to a remedy that arises out of our experience of grief and despair. And so you make your grief count is what you do. That's how it works. So there's this moment where the grief occurs. And in their case, their son winds up forever paralyzed and simply cannot function as an ordinary human being. And they have to deal with that grief all the remainder of their days. But they found a cure for somebody else. And now thousands of children across the world can get something really inexpensive, a little bit of oil they take once a day, that forever changes their neuromuscular pattern so that they can thrive and survive and succeed instead of having to succumb to the illness. That's how this whole thing works. Mm-hmm. Already participating in the powers of the next age. Not yet, as we should be.
Right. Yeah. Mm, I love that concept. That's very new to me. I mean, it makes sense with what I already believe, but just the way that you explain that is really interesting. Yeah.
It's in the Healing Prayer Book. So the bottom line is this book is not what I call a pat answer book. Mm-hmm. It is a guide to teach people how to be present to the presence in the middle of dealing with life. And we named five pathways. So the first book describes two miraculous healings that happen. Well, that's a co-write. My co-writer is the fellow who headed up Asbury Seminary in the States. He was the head of the Worldwide Evangelical Methodist Federation, 50 books under his watch. I mean, I'm writing with this guy and he's this veteran of all things writing. So, and it's just amazing to me. But getting back to this, we tell two stories of miraculous healing at the beginning of the book to set the trend. And then we delve into these five things, the instant heal, natural healing, which comes. And I didn't used to believe that was miracle, but I do now. I'll tell you why. Before my wife was healed, if a muscle was damaged, it never came back. After she was healed, she regenerates muscle tissue. So natural healing is miraculous in my mind. The pathway to the remedy, where you're guided to something, suffering that you don't understand, that seems to have no purpose, but in God's sight is redemptive. And then the final crossing, where you pass through death to life. And we talk about all five of those as intertwining realities in every life. And we talk about medicine, miracle, and mystery, and how these three M's summarize the way that most of us live. And the way I see this, science and faith have been seen as, how do I say this? As polar opposites, or they don't intertwine, they don't, and that's a false dichotomy. So science works on empirical thought. And so somebody who is dealing with a particular kind of symptom of trouble in culture is looking at something that's happening, and they say, okay, this particular kind of affliction has this particular kind of outcome, and it affects this particular cluster of muscles, et cetera. And if you do the following things, A and B and C, it leads to improvement. Or in this case, if you give this particular kind of antibiotic, it eliminates the dysfunction or whatever. And they test it and they do that. And then they give you the medicine, or they give you the therapy, or they give you whatever. And people spend years and years and years developing these therapies. And I believe that that comes from the hand of God just as much as the other. On the other hand, miracle is miraculous intervention in time and space, and it defies the laws of ordinary logic. Every now and then, the believer is led in the pathway to a remedy. And if somebody's done 20 years of research, take the gift. That they have suffered to get there. Their kid sister died. Their neighbor next door was afflicted in a car accident, something like this. And they that became the motivator for them, first of all, to accept the fact that this was life. And oh, by the way, we're going to not let that happen again. They already not yet. Every now and then, these two things flow in parallel columns, and then they overlap. A miraculous healing happens in the middle of your therapy. And then they separate out again, and you move forward with life. Most of us hive off our faith life and our enterprise life when, in fact, they're to be integrated. So this is my understanding of how faith and science interact with this. And I think it's a false thing to try and hold them separately. I'm wearing glasses. Why? Because I'm nearsighted. I need them, or else there's going to be trouble when I drive that car. So am I thankful for it? Yes. Do I wish I had better eyes? Yes. I could have got laser, but I had an astigmatism in one eye, so it didn't work, right? That's just not a good thing. So anyway, regardless of this, somebody's doing a work to try and improve your life. Say yes to that. And in the middle of that, don't stop crying out to God for redemption, for healing, for grace, because the Lord sends that. And from time to time, you will, in fact, participate or see miracle. And it's a gift when it happens.
Yeah. And I notice now, you know, there's a lot of people that believe in the power of prayer. And it's been like this for a long time as a group, you know, and there's a lot more online Zoom calls, you know, where people get together, and there's been some amazing things that have happened through that.
So I was on one of those calls last night.
Okay.
I have prayer partners, and when I was doing the pre-publication manuscript for this healing prayer book, here's what I do with writing. I don't just write and publish. I test the resource before I put it to the publisher. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have test groups. And there was a test. And of course, when COVID happened, you know, nobody could travel anywhere. And of course, Zoom technology took off, and we're doing that right now. And it's become ordinary for grandma and grandpa to use the computer to talk to their grandchild just as much as to visit them, because there was no choice. We had 3 years of this, right? But so I offered a Zoom course on the pre-publication manuscript for this healing prayer thing. And there was a lady who came on the course that I had known from a church that I had served in the Metro Toronto area. I was the pastor at Bramley Alliance for 7 years. She came along in year six, and then I moved to Alberta, and I did a 10-year run in that church. But regardless, I met this lady, Shirley, and she is now a radio talk show host. And she was on the call last night. So what I have to tell you something. She works in Barrie, just north of Toronto. And I agreed to speak at a conference that was being held in Barrie, and I went to visit her because I hadn't seen her in quite a while. And she'd been on a couple of my Zoom calls. And I did the interview around this, but let me back up to what happened in the course itself. None of us were able to go to church anywhere. We could not go. We weren't allowed. 10 people in a building, and it happened for everything, not just for churches. It was everything. Schools closed. And oh, man, you know, you went through it just like us. And in Canada, it was 10 in a building. And we couldn't go more than 100 kilometers or 60 miles down the road, because they would track your license plate to see whether or not you were traveling when you shouldn't have been, because they wanted to stop this virus. And there was no cure at that point. Anyway, getting back to this. So I open up these Zoom classes. And I offer one, and Shirley, who hadn't been in my radar for quite a while, hears that I'm teaching the course, and I'm her old pastor, so she gets on this. And whenever we're in the course, she would be on it, and we could barely see her, and sometimes she would just lie down. And I didn't know what was going on, if she was just tired after a day's work, and sometimes she'd just drop out of the call altogether. This went on 5 or 6 times, and eventually we said, Shirley, what are you doing? And then she said, oh, Pastor David, I've got lumbago in my legs, and I've got bulging discs, and I am in such terrible pain. I cannot move from my bed even to the bathroom. It takes me 15, 20 minutes to go from my bed to the bathroom. I can't work. I'm in terrible trouble. And while we were listening to her describe this, one of the signals of the Holy Spirit's presence landed on me. And that's where your heart just turns, it gets filled up with compassion and fire, and you know it's not you. And I had this, and my hand started to tingle and shake. And I sensed that we were supposed to pray for her. And there was another lady on the call named Wendy. Wendy lives in Alliston, Ontario. And I knew Wendy from work that we had done in the denomination across the years. And Wendy was on the call. And anyway, she said, Wendy feels the same thing. And Wendy says to me, Pastor David, we're supposed to pray for Shirley. I said, yes, we are. I said, Shirley, would you like us to pray for you? She said, oh, please, I'm in terrible pain. I can't even walk to the bathroom. This is terrible. And we started to pray. And in the middle of the praying, an amazing kind of thing happened. I suddenly received a gift of faith to believe that she would be well if I said it. And that's happened to me only 3 times. I've been in the ministry since 1981. That's happened 3 times, and this is the 3rd one. Okay, this happened on Zoom in 2022. I said, in the name of Jesus, stand up and then bend down and touch your toes. And she jumped out of bed. Something went snap. She felt this fiery heat coursing through her whole body. She reached down and touched her toes, and she started to jump and dance in the room that she was in. And then she went to the doc, and her back was completely restored. She was completely well. And it happened with 6 or 7 of us witnesses happened to this thing. So I interviewed her. She's now the radio talk show host at the Get Up and Go show in a Christian radio program in Barrie with 60,000 listeners. She says every morning she gets up and she talks about this marvelous stuff. And anyway, she became quite well, absolutely, totally, completely healed. And it happened over a Zoom call. I mean, we're talking about a Zoom call. So I recorded it, and I could even send it to you if you'd like to get a copy of that video. It's the most amazing thing. I describe how it works, and Shirley herself just was on the prayer meeting with me last night because they're praying for this teaching to expand and grow. That's what we were doing. And so talking to you is an answer to that prayer. That's amazing. And all your listeners and so on. But it was the most incredible thing, and now she's hale and hearty and strong. And when I first met her, she was in a terrible way. And she managed to get her legs under her. She was a single mom trying to raise her 2 kids, you know, and she got to the place where she could do this. And then this health thing hit. And so she found herself unable to work. And now she didn't have any money. She couldn't go to work, et cetera, et cetera. And the Lord healed her and healed her over Zoom of all things in a prayer meeting. That's it.
Yeah. So,
but I mean, we're talking last night here. I spoke to that lady last night and she retold the story. I interviewed her exactly a year ago as she got this program, and now she works as a radio talk show host in Southern Ontario. It's just the most incredible kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And it gives so much hope for people, and to know that there's a lot of power in us getting together and intention and setting.
And praying together, yes, that's yes. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you're being very cautious about this. I'll just say I'm a pastor, so I can talk this
way. Yeah, yeah.
I believe in the power of Jesus.
I love that we have this connection because I think it's important because there doesn't have to be a line in between this. I think it can all come together. It's just, there isn't a lot of that meshing, you know, that's kind
of. No. And we hide and we separate things out, and we have this thing called secular society. Yeah. And we don't allow people to talk about Jesus if they want to or anything else for that matter.
Yes.
You got to do this politically correct thing and then make sure you use the right pronoun. That's as good as far as it goes. Thank you very much. But it doesn't help you to advance the cause. And if you're afraid to speak what you believe, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be afraid to speak what you believe. You shouldn't be. But anyway, people want to learn about this. I mean, I wrote this book, Healing Prayer, specifically with the goal of helping people learn how to do it. So my ministry is called Spirit Equip because I equip spiritual disciplines. That's the reason I've called it Spirit Equip. Mm-hmm. And so people can get that book anywhere. It's available. You go to Walmart and say, I want the Healing Prayer Book by Chodka, and you can order it there. You'll get it.
Okay.
So, or you can go down to in the States, Barnes and Noble or Books a Million. You can go to Indigo. You can get it at Indigo if you want to. And any kind of bookstore that's attached to any kind of ordinary thing. This one is published by a publishing house. And so it's available across the planet. And Word Alive is the publisher in Canada, Whitaker House in the States. That's the name, but they run both companies. And so it's easy to obtain. So, or you can go to Amazon and you can order it there. It's available in ebook. It's available in trade paperback. It's available as an audio, and myself and my co-author do the audio on it. Mm. So you hear the voice of the people who wrote the book. Nice. And I just finished recording 15 videos that are going to be attached to each of the 15 chapters. They're 7 to 10 minutes each. And the intention here is that you get a little nugget from me, and then you go into the book itself and you have a small group with whom you learn. Or you can do this online too. But it's being produced by a group called JourneyWise. And that's going to be out in May or June. They're aiming for May, but they looked at me with a withering look and said it might be June of 2024. If people are listening to this, they might hear this 2 years from now. So if they have, then the bottom line is JourneyWise is going to be producing those videos, and they can be used for small group study in churches, or they can be used by individuals studying in your home because you want to do this. But the intention is to take the nugget that's found in each chapter, to open it up with me talking verbally about it, having a series of study questions that people can use. And if they want to go deeper, they can go into the resource itself and buy the book. So that's just happened. We're talking fresh, and we're talking just about a month and a half ago, I did the recording, and it's being produced as we speak by a Grammy Award winning studio from the States that does really good work.
So excellent.
Being available.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I think I'm encouraging our listeners to check into that and have a look, and we'll be anxiously awaiting.
Okay, well, listen, the book is here now.
So, we'll get the book. We'll get the book, want, and then we'll anxiously await the videos.
Yeah. Well, no, in Saskatchewan, people drive. They drive everywhere. Remember the first, I had a student pastorate in Saskatchewan. And people didn't think anything of 4 hours. They'd get up in the morning and say, we're going to the city. I was serving in Hudson Bay, Saskatchewan. And they'd get up at 6 o'clock. They would drive until 10. They would have a good breakfast. They'd do their shopping. And then they'd come back and they'd go to the evening meeting. That's like Saskatchewan. That's what they do, right?
Yes. Yes.
So yes, but you're driving, you want to have something to listen to. Mm-hmm. It's on audio. And so people can do that.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for everything you've shared today. I so appreciate you taking the time to talk about all the things that the miracles, the power of prayer, all of the things that you've expressed and how you got through your own grief. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. And, you know, that was not an easy ride. Let's be clear here. Just because I'm a person of faith doesn't mean that life is easy. Mm-hmm. And I do believe it's a help. I do believe that we have to pass through seasons where there's nothing else to do except to put one foot in front of the other. Weep and groan and cry, seek solace from friends, and then and be crazy every now and then. Yeah, not able to think straight. And then come to a place where you pass through all the stages of grief and come out the other side. Mm,
beautiful. Well, thank you. And you've given everybody so much hope. So I really appreciate that. And I want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll see you in the next podcast.
Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Awaken Your Soul's Journey podcast. We hope that you have found solace, understanding, and inspiration as we explore the information and wisdom that will help you move forward on your own journey. I want to express my deepest gratitude to my special guests, experts, and you, the listener. Thank you for sharing your stories and wisdom. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. The Awaken Your Soul's Journey community is here to support you. Sign up for my newsletter at www.healingenergy.world or check out the links in the description below. Until we meet again, may you find peace, healing, and transformation on your own unique path. sending you lots of love. Bye for now.